Hello, everyone. Happy Halloween. You might recognize me from Life, Bad Dreams, perhaps in an oranger form as the President of the United States. But for those of you who are unfamiliar with who I am Satan incarnate. Thank you, yes. And I wanted to share a little bit about Dorothy's poetry. When I starred in a movie last year, you guys might know it as The Witch, played Black Phillip, you know, one of my many forms. I asked that young Protestant girl if she wanted to live deliciously. Protestant girls are not particularly difficult to appease, so all I had to give her was a new dress and like some butter. I mean, come on, a soul for like some goddamn butter? It's like taking candy from Job. But to be honest, I'm a little bit embarrassed because if you've ever spent time with Dorothy or read her poetry, you know what it's like to truly live deliciously. You guys, hey, it's me. It's me, a person. So, for example, when Dorothy and I spend time together, we always end up with like a large amount of onion rings stuffed into our cheeks.
Yes, honey.
Milkshakes in hand, and perhaps on our way to the mall to try on some outrageously glamorous unmentionables. Right, so delicious. While the Dorothy experience is fun and tasty, she truly models the delicious in her poetry, along with the power and sting that comes from both getting and lacking what you desire. So for a few examples, in the poem, What to Buy in a HK Metro Station, we hear, in the station of the bustling metro, I tell you to buy a fresh mango cake, the one where the slices are petals, forming a mango flower atop cream, but they're probably already out. So the fantasy of satisfaction laid out in the turn of a line. And from Ode to Nurses, Love Hotels, and Maryland's on the cover of Playboy, it's funny how we're turned on by the simplest things. How Love Hotels in Japan have under-the-sea themed rooms, and what woman wouldn't want to get fucked dressed as a mermaid?
Preach!
So as you can see, Dorothy's laser-sharp wit lays out our desires there. A mermaid fantasy wherein, as the reader knows, the tail has to come off to get to the rest of the action. Dorothy's poetry has the ability to take you to one of the finest meals you've ever had, and I would argue, some of the best sex you have ever had. The way she approaches her subjects and melts her ideas into words is completely and unapologetically delicious. Dorothy Chan is the author of Attack of the 50-Foot Centerfold, forthcoming with Sport Press in March of 2018, and the chapbook Chinatown Sonnets, out in 2017 with the New Delta Review. Woo! She was a 2014 finalist for the Ruth Lilly and Dorothy Sargent Rosenberg Poetry Fellowship, and her work has appeared in Blackbird, Plume, The Journal, Spillway, Little Patuxent Review, The McNeese Review, Salt Hill Journal, and others. And for any of you following Dorothy on social media, you know there are many, many others. She's doing good work. Dorothy is the assistant editor of the Southeast Review, and she has a website called dorothypoetry.com. And so her sonnet, or her sonnet, her chapbook, Chinatown Sonnets, more than one sonnet, is available tonight if you guys are interested in doing a little trick-or-treat or purchase. And it comes with a lucky cat bookmark, which is like extraordinarily cute. And it's far less than the price of your souls. Well, like some of you. So please welcome to the stage Dorothy Chan. Oh.
First of all, thank you, Molly, for that lovely introduction, and you do look quite fine in your outfit.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for being here tonight and showing your support. Happy Halloween. It's also my dad's birthday.
Yes, Halloween! Yes!
He is a ripe 67 today.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't
look a day over 50.
And before I begin reading, I want to just thank a few more people. First of all, my poetry mom and dad, Barbara Hamby and David Kirby. And after we attend this reading tonight, everyone needs to go home first and buy the latest issue of APR because some of Barbara's votes are in that. So please show your support, buy a great issue of APR. Thank you so much for everything, Barbara and David. I really could not be up here without you, could not have a book or a chapel without you. So you mean the world to me. Thank you. And I would also like to thank the rest of my committee members, Adam Jollis and Dennis Moore, who are away at a Halloween party, but thank you from a distance. Thank you to our hosts, Josh and Tom. You're doing an amazing job. Thank you to the English Department for arranging this entire warehouse reading series. And also, finally, a long-distance thank you to New Delta Review, my team at New Delta Review. Justin Drain and Phil Spots with the managing editors who helped me produce this chapbook. And also major thank you to Richard Sykin, Drew Burke at Sport Press in Arizona for everything so far and everything that is to come. And everyone, thank you for being here. I'm going to start out with a new piece. This is called Triple Sonnet for My Father's Pet Goose, Pigeon Wars, and Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. Thank you to Marianne Chan of Split Lip Magazine for taking this poll for their first inaugural print issue.
Marianne!
Triple sonnet for my father's pet goose, pigeon wars, and daddy, daddy, daddy. Lovers in cartoons get into swan boats before declaring their undying love, but I'm terrified because have you seen the wedding footage of the swan eating the bride's white dress? Chasing her down the pond, and we live in such a scary world that the bird poems really aren't helping. Because what good do they really do? But what about my father growing up in Macau and Hong Kong across too many boarding schools in Asia to count? One day coming home to his mother, a goose arrives at his bedroom window like a sign from a higher being. And when I'm 23 in Singapore, I'm telling this story to a man double my age. We're greeted by pigeons. And no, I don't have daddy issues. I'm just pouring my heart out because that goose is my dad's best friend. Because my grandma ended up cooking that goose because the man I'm dating understands these old school Chinese stiff upper lip were poor. So I'm sorry, son, situations of survival. Because this same man wants me to write about his father, but I don't have time to be someone else's biographer. I don't have time to be someone else's biographer. When I'm thinking of how my father always made sure we had a family dog, a Buzzy, to keep us warm, take out for Italian ice and custard trips, how during the Pennsylvania winters my father would bring lost birds inside the house and feed them milk to keep warm, how growing up we'd go to the park every weekend to feed the ducks, and back to Singapore when I looked down, staring at the pigeons interrupting my date, starting a brawl over scone crumbs in the middle the coffee shop, I can't help but just look down, laugh at them. Daddy Daughter Issues, Las Vegas Strip, the sequel. My father wants me to marry a nice Chinese boy, the type you don't need to take home to mom and dad because mom and dad already picked him out of the cabbage patch before you were born based on your zodiac signs. And it's really a plug and shove formula, finding the right animal to balance out your year of the snake because a snake daughter is a seductress, the type of woman who doesn't take no for an answer. And I'm tired of all these compatibility equations and they say that Asians are good at math. So dad, stop feeding into that stereotype because my life isn't a game show to be won. But sure, I'll take my participation trophy, collect 200 while pass and go, adopt a Scotty dog and win $10 for second place in the world's cheapest beauty pageant with absolutely no sponsors. But I've watched too many shows growing up, and I'm still not sure if I should take the love or the money. Because the love part is my father's definition of lady, finishing my entire bowl of rice at dinner, no grain left over in the bowl, speaking softly no matter what, because my voice projects too much and my makeup is too loud and my clothes are too skimpy. And as my dad parks his car at Caesar's Palace, I know he just wants to bond before I move to Florida. And I really want to cry because he grew up eating moldy bread and soy sauce on rice, reading comic books he found in the trash the day my grandma killed his pet goose for dinner. And no, Dad, I won't take the definition of love you've proposed, but let's just move on today with our father-daughter gambling team, because I know you want the best for me, and you are. Thank you. Revenge of the Asian Woman, which might be my next book title.
Woo! Yeah, what it is!
Thank you, Barbara. Revenge of the Asian Woman. If I played roller derby, my name would be Yellow Fever, knocking out all those white boys from college who used to whisper sweet nothings to me in Mandarin, trying to seduce through the pure poetry of simplified Chinese on hand-delivered letters. And come on, this is the 21st century, and I'm not here to make friends or be your fourth-grade pen pal just because you're lonely after watching tentacle porn for the first time, and you don't understand real art. How to sit during tea ceremonies or where to watch the best Chinese opera, and how buying a kimono at Epcot doesn't qualify for a pass for Tokyo Fashion Week. And you expect praise, idolatry, applause from the entire Chinese population for your summers in Shanghai selling real estate, working for daddy, and oh, white boy, how you think every form of Asian food is a dumpling because they're all so cute and small, just like your type of girl with dark hair and red lips that you want to display as trophies, as gotta catch them all Japanese collectibles, as vintage dolls from the mainland, and they're all interchangeable, and all of this is too good for you, so don't you dare tell me how to pronounce nigiri when you can't even chuck sake like a CEO, or tell me where to get the best Hong Kong buffet when you can't stomach red bean and oyster sauce and don't know the difference between teas, and I don't have time to help you pick out a soy sauce. So just accept the fact that I look great in bullet short shorts and will never take you home to my homeland. Thank you. You've been an amazing audience so far. And I also wanted to thank Robin and Barry of our faculty for being here. Thank you so much. Trophy wife for life. The bombshell on TV who's dressed to kill tells the world she wants to be a trophy wife for life, and it's like the worst Miss America answer on a program that isn't Miss America, but she's really serving as Greek mythology all over again, like when Aphrodite out of her shell, out of Botticelli, kissed Hephaestus, accepting his marriage proposal because he promised she'd never have to work a day of her life. And poor Poseidon with his killer nipples who only promised an ocean and trout for dinner. And poor Ares who only promised fire and a fair to remember, fucking in between battles and a six-pack. But really, Aphrodite should have chosen herself because who needs a man when you're the goddess of love and sex and tuxedo strawberries and oysters before a meal and garter belts peeping under your see-through robe. And of course, that feeling you get after brushing glitter on your cheeks, your chest, your legs, making love to yourself, sitting on your bathroom counter, eyeing yourself in the mirror or on the dance floor of a disco redone, blue cocktail in hand, gold short shorts riding on gorgeous girls, everyone in sequins and wigs, and back to Miss Trophy Wife on screen. I think, oh honey, you came all the way to television to tell the world about your MRS and sushi eating and Pilates and workout videos galore, and settling to serve a man who won't get freaky with you between the sheets. No, Jackson Pollock, you paint me, I'll paint you. We get nasty and poster board. Our canvas of voila, here is modern art of hair and paint and cum and gum on board, studied by art history majors at university museums as some sort of declaration. And I'll Warhol you if you Warhol me as we lie naked on the floor, taking Polaroids of each other's parts. Because no, honey, stop jumping on the next big thing, the next big opportunity, the next big money, the next big meatloaf eater. Because the best thing in the world is for you to head to toe, paint yourself in glitter, pulling up that bodysuit ready to turn some men down. Woo! Vote for everyone else's fantasies. Emphasis on everyone else's. It's such a sex circus how James Bond makes love to women in round beds, on yacht decks, and hotel rooms with golden carts of caviar and champagne and foie gras nearby, as we clink our glasses watching cinema of women plotting against men the second they enter in limo and evening gown or riding fancy trains with so much leg room. I'm already suspicious by the time they're served lollipop lamb chops or how they fly in private jets and join the Mile High Club. Though the mission needs to be complete in a couple of seconds. And we fly to Tokyo, where Michiko lies nude, covered with leaves on a sushi table, taco and toro fatty tuna over her body, as the businessmen barely ogle. But we know what they're thinking, since one of them pulled out tentacle porn in the train an hour earlier, no one batting an eye. At the dinner table next door, there's another beauty with another set of sushi, and the one next door, a beauty with even longer hair, scallop sushi over her breast, because businessmen are so predictable in their fantasies. Everyone is so predictable in their fantasies, which is why an American reality show circa mid-2000s presents the same scenario, though this time the man at the house goes insane from the Japanese spectacle right in front of him. Maybe he's mad at the tackiness of luxury, like how the male strippers in that one documentary turn into sparkling Adonises and Poseidons and Parises as the club goers drink cheap red wine. And well, Hollywood, you can keep your glittering dancers, but I'd rather have the buff man wearing nothing but an apron cooking ramen when I come home. Mm. And don't we all? Miss Hong Kong, I'll always love you. And for those of you who know me, I've read a lot of poems about Hong Kong because that's where my parents are from, and I go there every year, and it's a really interesting, lovely experience. And something that really fascinates me about Hong Kong is their tablet culture, their pornographic culture, and also their pageant system culture. The women in pageants in Hong Kong become full-fledged celebrities because the island is so small, unlike here. So it's a very interesting comparison. Miss Hong Kong, I always love you. We land in Hong Kong, and the first present my mom receives from her best friend is a tabloid. Miss Hong Kong 1974 is on the cover, her botched plastic surgery and Botox showing how life's a forever pageant. And I think about how buying someone a tabloid is like buying someone a nightgown or a pair of boy shorts or toilet paper when you know they're out, or a gift card to a chain restaurant. You'd better be damn close or dating for at least 3 months. Back to Miss Hong Kong, I look at her looking at a photo of herself as a 20-something during her short-lived singing career, performing in a wedding dress as hot men dress as waiters come up behind her, trying to steal her attention with flowers or chocolates or coupons or walks on the beach. But Miss Hong Kong, I throw those flowers out because they make me sneeze. And I mix the romance on the beach because the sand tickles my feet. But I'll devour your whole box of truffles or caramels. Why are we even reminiscing? Just go to a 5-star in Central, and the world's hottest waiters will be lining up just to take your order. And Miss Hong Kong, I'll love you forever, but please, eat the men like dim sum and throw that goddamn wedding gown. White's really not your color. Let's skip the bondage club tonight, honey. That's when you know you're not the side salad, but the surf and turf, the main attraction everyone's flocking into the restaurant for, big and brassy and juicy, up for all seasonings, and isn't Let's Skip the Sex Club Tonight the best life or the world's sexiest marriage? But what if the story goes back to when I was 19, visiting Tokyo, staying in a hotel a couple blocks down from a fetish club, walking through Roppongi nightlife, girls passing out tissues with anime on the packaging, the hentai of big breasts and nipples looking baby face grinning characters with 20 hearts around them because they're in love, and of course there's a handy number to call for bubbly girls in love. And my friend wanted some girls, asking me to pose as his girl in love, because couples get him much cheaper, but I'll get him for free because I'm a lady in love, as we stand outside the fetish club. He looks up close at the photographs, Japanese Betty Pages with gags in their mouths, and children think those are jawbreakers, and why won't you swallow? Tied up at their ankles are the men at the mercy of their women, whip armed and ready. My friend looks over and closer, and he was this out. It's funny how he probably could have handled the real thing but not the photograph, and at the time I could handle the photograph but not the real thing. another new poem. Ode to peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, Judy Jetson in the 60s version of the future. And this is for Alex Quinlan, Catherine, and Baby Galway. Alex and I spent countless hours a week in the Southeast Review office getting so much done, and he means the world to me. It's going to be very hard for me when he leaves. I'd like the watermelon juice from a Singapore hawker because when I was 5, the Jetsons promised me an appliance that will deliver food from any part of the world, any part of the universe. And I think about what potato chips taste like on Saturn, since all chips, prawn cocktail, ketchup, all dressed, poutine, jalapeno, and scallop, they're already so delicious. Take me to Canada because I'm starving for the future. Don't you just love how meals look in video games? Fancy restaurants with goblets of blossom wine and floats, entrees of bacon with rose petals scattered on a plate, the foods making love, orgasms on a dish, volcanoes of pasta exploding, octopus tentacles, the biggest Japanese porn star in the world right in front of you. And would you dare eat something that hisses back? Baked Alaska screaming, ooh, 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 and let's go down on mashed potatoes and scallops out of the giant clam. Thinking about our precious because food and sex, food and sex. Wasn't Judy Jetson such a babe? Wasn't she in her trapezoid outfit? White hair, the way she ogled rock stars, the way she was the teenager you once were. The ultimate girl next door, that's even still a thing because everyone's moved, and girls like her don't live next door anymore, and no one owns a house, and no one's eating avocado toast with pepper on top, because who wants that when you can order stuffed French toast and scrambled eggs with lobster, a pork belly Benedict and bottomless bellinis and Bloody Marys, extra spicy grilled cheese on top for garnish, but where are the flying cars, the see-through houses, robots, and slim spacesuits? Where are those things, the latex nipple-hugging spacesuits that were promised to us, the mod clothing from Mars? Where's the 60s version of the future where you see George fly, Jane steal his wallet, or the flight attendant and Michael Kors, Jet Set Life, serving you Mile High Club realness and a tomato juice and bun? Telling the passengers it's okay to smoke on the plane because this is a swinging time and we don't know any better. Where's my other world? But I think of my parents coming to America from Hong Kong, arriving at my aunt's in Chinatown, wandering Manhattan, dreaming of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, thinking there was some kind of gourmet dessert against bread. And why not throw in rose macaroons while you're at it and a boatload of sprinkles while you're sandwiched? Where are those flying cars? Oh, Mom and Dad, I really wish you had them. I really do, because I know you cried coming here, really hoping for that dessert sandwich. For a glass house in the sky, not a white picket fence and only one international channel of cable. But at least our house was on a hill, the highest on the block. The other one's bowing down good feng shui since 3500 BC, facing the water, as Grandpa would say. But I know you'd both rather look to the skies, pilot that invisible jet out of here. Thank you. A Halloween poem.
Ah, oh, spooky!
Triple sonnet for my aggressive forehead. Dad thinks my forehead is too Godzilla, too Tarzan, too Wonder Woman, tells me enough to tie my hair back, exposing it like it's the Frankenstein monster from beneath my childhood bed or the mollusk that challenged the world. And Dad, I love you, but you should know that I'm a nightmare as a woman who can make the earth stand still, calling all UFOs from planets beyond to paint me on canvas just as I am, a Chinese girl nicknamed Yellow Fever, chowing down on all the pork buns and chicken biscuits and shrimp on me at the buffet. And of course, all the men and women, as a star in my own B movie, give it a triple X rating. Every girl's dream of playing opposite King Kong, and you know I'm not some favorite type who screams at the sight of a hand. And Dad, I think about all the 8 toys you bought me when I was a child, because you never wanted me to be alone, never wanted me to go a day without laughing or applauding. And did I mention that you were born on Halloween, which makes me half evil? I'm joking. But Dad, you've got to let me keep my forehead, despite your old school Chinese beliefs of girls hiding their warrior brains. And I know you're just looking out for me, but my forehead has its own life, like an invisible screen, one-way glass where the admin are watching the women try on lipstick, but in my forehead is the other way around, because let's let the boys play for once and the girls watch, because every lip could use a bit more rouge, purple, crimson, burnt orange, hot pink. How at once I want to dress up as a flight attendant, an accountant, someone, just someone at the front of the class holding a ruler, and yes, If I fill out a survey from a sex magazine, I'm checking the forehead as my favorite body part. And the next three poems are a, of course, as we're reading the mandatory sonnets from my collection, Chinatown Sonnets.
Woo! For sale after the reading.
One. And this chapbook is a couple sonnet sequences in a row. There's 28 sonnets total. So I'm just going to be reading three of them. They can be read in the order that they are presented in or out of order. That's the beauty. One, Chinatown from the movies. This isn't Chinatown from the movies. Neo Noir, Jack and Faye together. A cello plays the whole time they love me as Jack kisses our starlet. Her cat eyes seducing his deep star. The no sweet coo comes out of her. She lights a cigarette once the sex is over, leaves her lover, warning him that her father's a bad man. But those Faye eyes, how we're lit by surprise when we hear that end gunshot she fires. And even with blood, there's romance. The way Jack looks out at the empty wrote a lover dead, more regret, let's forget this heartbreaking mess of Hollywood. Three, Chinatown Dogs Carnival. Chinatown dogs drool over cake and duck, watching the dangling ducks from the windows with pig heads hanging and coffee brown bags sucking duck fat the way club girls chug drinks, alcohol soaking through the fabric, flimsy silk tears. The dogs stop and stare at the roasted duck about to fall off string. It's a carnival freak show, layered fat, livers apart in flesh, braid ate good, my teeth ripping off the crisp brown shine of skin with goo on the bottom, dripped in orange sauce, adding some glazed pork, put in all the soup with a duck based broth, throw in some noodles. I eat all the fat that comes out of the meat. And this is number 15. Hong Kong Rococo. We'll always have Paris, Casablanca, 1942. My uncle tries his best take on Paris, his apartment with fake crystal and cases. Clouds on the ceiling with chandelier, Rococo rotary phone, elegant 18th century in the middle of Hong Kong. The couch is a French blue. I sit there eating corn on the cob and cheese bread, gazing at the clouds, this Asian obsession with France. Take the Japanese with Paris syndrome. The couple wants the Rose of Versailles, Marie Antoinette's cottage and castle, but they're entering our century of gritty France. They return home sad. It's not the fancy Paris scene in ads. The Japanese embassy steps in. And this is my final poem for the night. Thank you all for being such a good audience. And this is dedicated to my dear friends, Zach and Allison Strait.
Hey, Allison.
Zach is taking his prelims tomorrow, so let's all wish him luck. He's going to do really well. But yes, this is triple sonnet for good boys, grandma's cookies, and girls with their cream cheese and locks. For Zach and Allison Strait. My grandma hates it when I wear black because that's not what good Chinese girls do to their ancestors or to the good Chinese boys who take you home to family dinner, finishing your whole bowl of rice, not a grain remaining. Because this is how ancient love matches happened, not in the boardroom or the bedroom or over DM, asking a cute guy to grab a seasonal latte and walk when you meant to say, let's get a gin and tonic or just get straight to the point. But of course, grandma's having none of that, and maybe she's right. The dinner table is the best place to meet your soulmate because relationships are really the back and forth of deciding on takeout. Peking duck, mushy pork, crab rangoon, hot and sour soup, or five greasy slices of sausage for you, black olives and pepperoni for me, champagne and hot dogs, toasting to loving the same James Bond and sci-fi movies, and oh, what more could you want out of a soulmate? And grandma hates it when I wear black because grandpa buys fresh oranges every week to honor dead ancestors. And if Mulan's grandma believed in jade beads around her elegant neck for luck, mine believes in red and pink ensembles. And no, it's not over sex. It's optimism, the way she remembers me as a little girl baking cookies in the shapes of camels, wearing my red plaid headband and berets, a sweater with a burger logo because I was moving to America, and she stopped smiling after that move. And now I've got a thing for guys who like llamas, and grandma doesn't care for runway fashion, girls walking down the street in tight black leather dresses or leopard mini skirts. set of t-shirts, because even if I'm from American Potato, I've got to keep my Chinese love. Thank you.
Woo!